But first, with all the news this week out of Las Vegas and Puerto Rico, it is worth taking a moment to remember that tomorrow is an important day in the story of DACA. That is the program for young people who were brought to the United States as children by their parents who are undocumented immigrants. DACA lets them get a work permit, and that lets them get a job, a social security number, a driver's license, even a loan for something like a house or a car, and they won't have to fear deportation under this program. With the Trump administration's plans to end DACA, tomorrow is an important deadline in those plans. We have talked about this a few times with immigration lawyer Carol Lynam, who runs the Lynam Law Office in St. Paul, so we wanted to check back in with her. Welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
If you have questions here about this, maybe you're actually trying to finish your own application. If you have a specific question, give us a call. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. Please don't call or text if you're driving. And, you know, any general questions you have about the program as well, give us a ring. So remind us why tomorrow is important. What's exactly happening?
So tomorrow is the deadline to submit renewal applications for DACA recipients whose DACA work permits expire by March 5th, 2018. So there is no renewal allowed after tomorrow. So
yeah.
Tomorrow is a big deal.
So this goes back to when the president made the announcement that he's phasing out DACA in 6 months. That 6 months is the March 5th. Is March 5th date?
Yep, March 5th is the 6 months from the September 5th announcement.
So that means if you're currently on DACA, is that right? And that permit expires between now and March 5th. You're the only remaining people who can renew. Do I have that right?
Exactly. So there was this group of like about 154,000 people whose DACA expired or their work permit expired before March 5th. So they were the only people who had the opportunity to renew this for an additional 2 years. So now we're knocking on that door now.
But you don't have till March 5th to renew. You got to do it by tomorrow.
No, and I think that led to some of the confusion why a lot of people haven't applied to renew is that it's on this October 5th deadline it's kind of hard to understand why it exists.
So has that manifested how has that confusion manifested in the work you do? Have you seen fewer applications than you thought you would?
I've seen fewer applications. Overall, there's quite a few people who have not applied nationwide. I think it's like 106,000 of the 154,000 have applied. So there's this 58,000, there's this like huge number of people that still haven't applied.
Okay, so because we know whose permits expire when, we actually have some pretty good numbers. And so what you're saying is that nationwide, it's 150,000 who are in this window who could apply, but only to date 106,000.
That's right.
Have applied. What kind of questions have you been getting in your office here in the last month since this was announced?
It's been a lot of, well, my work permit expires in June. Can I apply to renew? Or my work permit expires some other date after March? And those answers are no. USCIS has made it clear they will not accept renewal applications for ones that expire after March 5th. The other one's about the filing fee. The filing fee to renew DACA is $495. How can I pay that? How can I get help paying that? That's been a big concern for people since they only had a month's notice to do this.
I think I saw that the state of Rhode Island, I believe, did something, executive order or passed a bill, and they were actually going to pay that $500 for anyone who's renewing. So that state did it, but I don't think we have any programs like that in Minnesota.
We didn't have that here. The Mexican consulate was willing to pay the filing fee for certain Mexican nationals who were qualified. But otherwise, and there were some nationwide programs that were paying filing fees, but we didn't have that sort of Rhode Island program here.
So if you have a question here for Carol Lynam, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at WeberTom1. Let's take a call here from Bernie, who is in South St. Paul. Hi, Bernie. What's your question here today?
Well, it's so elementary. I feel like I'm almost ashamed to ask it, but Is there some reason a DACA student is ineligible to apply for United States citizenship?
Thanks for the question, Bernie.
Yeah, so the answer is DACA is not a pathway to anything other than a work permit. So someone who has DACA isn't eligible to immediately go and apply for permanent resident status or U.S. citizenship. They would still need another path forward based on typically it'd be through a family member, to get onto a different kind of status. So unfortunately, it isn't possible for most of these DACA recipients to just apply for something else.
But Bernie's question also, even though you have made a distinction between DACA and citizenship, because DACA does not get you on a path to citizenship, Bernie's question is also rooted in the fact that that if you did get citizenship, all of the issues by being DACA or by being undocumented would go away. And so I think the other spirit of his question is, okay, I get it. DACA only gets you the work permit, but why not have all of these people who are on DACA just apply for citizenship as well? Is that an option for these people?
For most of them, no. I mean, there isn't a direct path. The way that the DACA program was created was just towards a work permit. So we have this whole sort of tiered system set up with immigration where you start as a permanent resident, you have to be that for 3 to 3 or 5 years, and then you can apply for U.S. citizenship. So unfortunately, there isn't a path forward out of DACA. The DREAM Act, you know, there's some other legislative solutions that do provide for that, but this didn't.
That's the real key, because when people hear that Congress might consider a fix to DACA, they may actually go a step further. And in addition to making it okay to work, if they pass the DREAM Act as it's written today, that would also include that path to citizenship.
Yep. The DREAM Act would provide for a pathway towards conditional permanent residence and then a pathway into citizenship. That pathway would take about 5 years. But there's four different solutions, and they all offer a pathway to citizenship. Even some of the more restrictive pathways forward offer that. So that's great news.
And this gets into, and we always should go over this whenever you're here, Kara, because there's a lot of confusion and it's very complicated. You have a whole area of law just for immigration law because it's so complicated and that's how you make your living. So that's why we're taking your questions for Carolina at 1-800-242-2828. But you mentioned that, you know, if you want to go for citizenship, you have to be a permanent resident first. Mm-hmm. Well, why can't they just do that? I'm going to keep backing you up to the step before. You know what I mean? Because the one thing I had heard is that people who are in DACA, and by the way, the caller mentioned that these are students, and I get why you say that, but the people who are in DACA are actually young adults. They've graduated from college. Most people in DACA are in their 20s and lower 30s. But the way I heard it was, the question is, well, if you're in DACA and you're this undocumented person who came here of no fault of your own, just get in line. And the one answer I heard is that there is no line. Why is there no line? Well, okay.
I wish I knew.
I know that. I didn't mean for that to be the political question. What I meant was, why doesn't the current structure, you know, why can't you just, to go to that original question, just apply to do this permanent residency? Is it because you came to the U.S. illegally that it cuts off some of these abilities? Is that right?
Partially, yes. So if you are a person, let's say you have DACA, let's say you're under 35 right now, and you're not married, have no children, but have DACA, you don't have that kind of family relationship. If you enter the United States without permission, without going through the border, you know, going through the desert or over the river, you don't have the kind of entry that would allow you, even if you did have a U.S. citizen spouse or a U.S. citizen child over 21, you just don't have that family relationship to put you into that other kind of status. So one of the things we've had to do over the last month is rescreen these DACA recipients to see if they've gotten married, or none of them are going to have children over 21, but, you know, to see if they've married, how they entered, because their entry has a lot to do with if they're eligible to change status.
So the way you entered the United States affects which line you can get into to apply for citizenship. Do I have that right?
Yep. If you entered with no papers, like with aunt or uncle or whoever in the desert, then you're entered without inspection, and then you aren't able to just switch over to permanent resident status in the United States.
You can't just go get, and I'm going to use that metaphor, you can't just go get in that line because you came in, quote-unquote, the wrong way. Although the empathy people have for DACA and Dreamers is that they did this. This wasn't their choice. They were brought in by their parents.
Yeah, even if they came in on a visitor visa and, you know, they came in as a visitor visa, went to Disney World and stayed, that person actually is a much different legal situation than someone who crossed in the desert, because the person who has the visa stamp and came on the visitor visa, if they get married later and otherwise, you know, have no other bars to permanent residence, like criminal issues or things like that, they can apply for permanent residence based on marriage to a U.S. citizen, possibly. So it's it ends up being very complicated.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd heard is if you did come in through the desert, if you have that no documentation, the only way to do it is what? Go back to whatever country or go back to some other country for 10 years. Is that right?
So you'd have two options. Well, you would have had two options previously. It would be to get advanced parole, travel, and then come back in with a visa stamp and then ask for your green card based on marriage to a U.S. citizen. Alternatively, you could go through a provisional waiver program where you ask for like pre-pardoning of your unlawful presence before you leave. Mm-hmm. Go through that entire process, which is based on hardship to a U.S. citizen only. And then you do have to depart and spend, couple of weeks, couple of months, maybe longer in your home country waiting for what's called an immigrant visa, which is a green card visa to be issued to you, which is quite the process.
So I get that people who were born here and don't have to worry about this, I get why there's confusion and, you know, you ask a question about citizenship and you make the point that actually DACA is not about citizenship. I get that. I get that among people who don't have to think about this day in and day out. We might not all get that distinction. What about people who are in this? Do they get those all these distinctions?
Yes,
100%. They're totally versed and educated, and they get or they're just as confused as the rest of us.
I think they're pretty versed in it.
They are.
We've had DACA long enough now that people have been thinking about where this is going or what they may or may not be eligible for.
Yeah.
So I haven't had most clients certainly get the distinction that they have to go into permanent resident status first, then to become a citizen. Some have said they never want to become citizens. They just want to stay permanent residents if they can get that status because their home country may not allow them to become a U.S. citizen. It's been people are pretty plugged into this when they have DACA.
Let's take a call here from Mike, who's in New Hope. Hi, Mike. What's your question for Carolina?
Yeah, in this current anti-immigrant environment, with Congress only having 6 months to come up with a new DACA-type program, is it safe for these folks to be providing their current address and their current where they're working? Because it just seems like, wow, they got an instant database to round up folks that if they don't come up with something.
Thanks for the question, Mike. Kara?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for people that are renewing, the government already has their data. The only thing you're really giving is a current address. They already have the biometrics. They have the full name, date of birth, kind of almost anything they would need. For initial applicants who hadn't previously had DACA and maybe had gotten their application right before September 5th, you know, that's a much different situation. They have now volunteered their information to immigration. As recently as yesterday, I believe the acting U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Director had said they would not be doing the information sharing with ICE for enforcement purposes. We'll see how that shakes out, but that is the current word on the street from them.
So Mike's question is really the question that all of these people had to ask themselves before they ever signed up for DACA. And so for the hundreds of thousands who did, they went through that question Mike just asked, right? And they answered yes. They said it's worth the risk.
Yeah. And we've been having, or at least I have been having kind of know your rights, discussions with people. What happens now if ICE does knock on your door? What rights do you have or not have to open that door? And what do you or do you not have to say to ICE if they do come knocking? And that was a conversation we weren't as worried about before this announcement.
What have you found when you rescreened? Have you found places? Have you found hundreds of, I don't know how many clients you have, Kara, but have you been able to find enough places when you rescreen, like maybe they did get married or maybe, you found something they could actually apply some other way. Have you been able to find some?
We found some people that could apply for permanent residence. We found some people that are eligible for U visas, which are a visa for people who have been victims of certain crimes and cooperated with the police for the investigation. That is a pathway towards permanent residence and citizenship. But it seems to be more likely that we're not finding options for people and we're just hoping for a legislative solution for most people.
Which we're all waiting for because that would have to come from Congress and
that's correct.
To be determined. I want to take a call here, and it's very specific, and I know you won't have all the answers here, Kara, but I think it may help showcase how complicated this can be because I think Stephen in Albert Lee actually has a question about two people in his family. Stephen, did he drop? Oh, I guess we don't have Stephen, but I have a note here.
Okay.
Stephen said that his wife is from Honduras and had been here for 12 years, not undocumented, and that she has a son who'd been here since age 4, a senior in high school. The guy who had called was a vet, and he just wondered if there's a way to go through the naturalization process. And my immediate thought when I saw that note was that the answer looks like it might be different for his wife versus his son. Is that right?
Yeah, it would depend on how they entered and how many times. Because if his wife entered more than one time, if you were here, you entered once without permission, left, and then came back again without permission, now you've triggered a more serious bar that's not waivable. That 10-year bar that we briefly discussed earlier, yeah. That is waivable. That's that provisional pre-pardon you can do while you're still in the United States. We need to know a lot more, but the son would probably have more options if they were married, you know, then Stephen is the U.S. citizen stepfather, and there might be some options there, but it would still come down to entry,
right?
How they enter the United States.
So actually, I guess Stephen did call back. And Stephen, we don't actually have enough time to go through all the particulars of your case, but in general, Kara noted here that one of the ways that immigration law is so complicated is that the answer might be different for your wife and for her son. Is that what you're finding as well?
Yes. We have not had the opportunity to go into a lot of research in relation to this. We are newly married, so it'll be 2 years in December. So this is all new to me. I'm a Marine Corps veteran, American-born citizen. So with the information I did find out is that it could possibly be a little bit easier in that case. But again, that's hearsay. I'm not for sure on that. But her son is now at the time, he's 17 years old. He was 4 years old when he was brought over. He is a outstanding student in high school as a senior, all AP, advanced placement courses, college credit, plays soccer. You know, my wife, she goes to work every day, but, you know, we live in fear. This has caused me anxiety, and I'm an American citizen. You know, it's obviously a very, very touchy subject. You know, my wife just wants to be a normal American who pays her taxes and live the family life here in the United States with myself. And her son obviously is in a little bit of fear as well, but he does his best to go to school every day and produce the grades and effort in his academics that he's doing. I'm very proud of him. Quite a bit of anxiety.
Well, Stephen, good luck to you, and thanks for sharing that, and thanks for calling in. And just the only final note on Stephen, Kara, is does the fact that he's a vet matter at all?
Yes.
It does.
So there was a program, it's still in place, called Parole in Place, mm-hmm. which is just for military, current active duty members, and former people who are no longer members, active members of the military, to ask for their spouses and certain other family members to basically... It's kind of a legal term of art to parole them in without them ever leaving the United States. It's done all on paper here where you would submit a request and then they're granted this parole without ever actually crossing a border.
Yeah.
Which is a great option for people who have military.
So there is a possibility there for him because he's a vet. In general here, and I know we only have the day, right? Tomorrow's the deadline, but who should people be calling with questions like that? I know you had some hotlines set up for a while. Are those still going? Or
I don't think the hotlines are still going. I think at this point...
well, it might be a little late now,
yeah.
But
for
tomorrow's day.
I would be calling legal aid in your local mm-hmm. jurisdiction. The Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota was the one, and Volunteer Lawyers Network are both options.
Okay. So Google the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. That might be a good place to call if you have questions as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, Kara, thanks you. Thank you for the update as well. I appreciate you coming back.
Thank you.